Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You're listening to Down to Agribusiness with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another agribusiness podcast from the Farmers Journal. This one's for the week of the 24th of November. A month and a day to Christmas, nearly there. Phelim, I think since this Christmas comes around every year, we may as well look at that other hearty perennial we have, and that's Brexit. There was some comments earlier last week about the UK getting into a Swiss type deal with the EU, which just smelled like kite flying at the time, and seems to be treated as such. But there are kind of some ambitions maybe from the UK to perhaps have another look at the whole Brexit trade deal agreement. You have a lot of words in the paper this week, again, as our kind of, I suppose, our institutional Brexit knowledge repository. So maybe you could kind of give us a rundown of where things are and what the ins and outs of all the latest news is.
That's right, Larkin. Brexit is one of these stories that never really goes away, and yet nothing much ever seems to happen. And I suppose from an Irish farmer's point of view, so long as it remains that way, then there's no problem. There's no particular issue. The big fear that we always have in Ireland from a farming and beef and, as opposed to a lesser extent, cheddar cheese export perspective, if it does go wrong, then it's the one that's in the firing line here. And it will be in the firing line fairly quickly because, you know, if trade disputes do develop between countries, and we've seen a recent enough example of it here between Europe and the US in the Boeing-Airbus dispute, you know, you get into targeted sanctions. Now, what's targeted sanctions mean? It means that basically the parties on both sides, they look around and they see, now, where, for example, is the Prime Minister's constituency in a UK context? Where is the Trade Minister's constituency? And they will pick an industry that are important to those, and they will hit those with sanctions. In the US, for example, Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Senate at the time, his constituency, his state, Harley Davidson was a big player there. So they got targeted for taxes. Now, if the UK, if the EU and the UK are in a trade dispute, the most obvious place to look would be in terms of maximum impact is Irish beef and Irish cheddar cheese. Those are the two big commodities that are traded from the European Union, i.e. Ireland, into the UK. Now, look, this is something that hopefully and we would expect will never happen, but it's important to be aware of that risk. Now, what has been happening lately, we've had entered a period of what you might call relative political stability in the UK after the Boris Johnson and Liz Truss premierships.
Definitely been a kind of low bar to get over there, yes. But
yeah,
yes.
And Rishi Sunak's premiership is exploring ways because they have a major black hole in the budget. Like, you know, you were talking 40, 50 billion. Coincidentally, the size of a black hole that their own government, their own agency, the Office for Budget Responsibility in the UK, which is a government agency, have identified the cost of Brexit at 4% to the GDP of the UK. And putting that in number terms, you're talking something up to anything up to 88 billion euro there. So very neatly, this debate comes back in. And the government at this stage, even they flew that, and you termed it correctly there, Larkin, they flew the kite to see what the appetite would be like for a closer relationship with the EU, for those that that are hardline Brexit. We can have no relationship with the EU. But there's a growing body of pragmatists, as well as those that always believed in the EU, of course, that are saying, well, look, right, you know, UK economy is in some difficulties following COVID with the Ukraine war, etc. And, you know, is a row and barriers between yourself and your biggest and closest trading partner a good idea? And I think there's a mood developing in the UK that we could maybe look at seeing, is there any way that we can kind of align ourselves some way, but not say that we're becoming part of the institutions? It's a difficult circle to square, this one, but I think it's one that they want to get done more and more because they see the cost is there, or if you like, the win that could be had if they were to get into that closer relationship. And we haven't once mentioned the Northern Ireland Protocol, Lorcan. I don't think we need to go there because that one has been well kicked about at this stage. But that's it in a nutshell. The full story is explained in on pages 24, 25 of this week's print edition of the Farmers Journal, of course, and it's online. And we refresh the online piece on it regularly as well.
Yeah, just to kind of, I suppose, to hit on one point you've made there, like, it's not that the facts have changed at all. It's just the political mood music has changed a little bit. So we haven't, like, you know, there's no new news, no new moves, no new legislation, no new anything. But just the mood has slightly changed in Westminster, and that's what's causing this kind of slight excitement about maybe they'll move slightly closer to the EU.
I think you've put your finger on it there, Lorcan. And if you look at the political commentary around Irish and UK and indeed European media over the past week or 10 days, you can see that that's it, that is the case. And, you know, part of this might be, if you like, a return to normalisation in UK politics of looking at the nuts and the bolts of there is a budget deficit. How in the name of God are we going to fill it? The Chancellor's autumn statement, that's the Minister for Finance, the autumn statement announced major tax rises, many of which, of course, are deferred until after the next general election, swinging cuts in terms of public expenditure, and you know they still need to find more money. So you can see the where they're coming at this from. They see a problem there that needs to be solved, and I think there might be a growing body of opinion there. You use the term mood music that could be saying that, well, maybe, you know, a closer trading relationship with our former colleagues in the European Union mightn't be such a bad idea after all. Now the trouble is, and maybe we have a competition here. How do you name it? Because it can't be called a Swiss deal, it can't be called single market, it can't be called customs union. We have to be creative. But again, leave that to the diplomats. They usually are good at coming up with words and big titles.
Very good. Thanks, Anine Phelan. Speaking of, UK and stuff, one thing I think I looked at this week was Origin Enterprises. They're the agri-services group. They kind of have a global footprint, but very much concentrated in UK and Ireland. They came up with their quarterly trading update during the week, and it really was kind of a blockbuster trading update. If you looked at, like, the UK and Ireland revenue was 460 million euros, and like their total global revenue in the same quarter last year was 454 million euros. So they had greater revenue from UK and Ireland than they had from their entire global operations a year ago. That's kind of across the board. See, like, general company revenue of the quarter was up about 60%. And, like, there's two things driving this. I think there's a really interesting bit in this report I kind of thought was very interesting. Like, they're saying the inflation clearly is a big driver. So the cost of everything is going up. So if the cost of everything goes up, then your revenue goes up, so long as you can hold your sales volume steady or grow your sales volume. And they have been able to grow their sales volume while pushing prices through to farmers, for two reasons. One reason is that the farmers have had, and the planting season has worked really well this year. The autumn winter planting season has got going early, so all that is captured in their first quarter, or the quarter, the results that they reported there. So you see a lot of spending by farmers has happened kind of earlier on the season, which obviously falls into quarter. But the other thing they said, which I think is interesting, is that, like, that the sentiment among their customers, I mean, it's farmer sentiment, is really positive at the moment. Farmers are getting paid a lot of money for the crops that they've taken out of the ground, and because they get a lot of money for crops, their farm balance sheets are in better condition. The farmers are able to pay the higher costs that are put in. So we hear, like, I've written a lot, we've seen lots of writing about inflation being a bad thing always and everywhere, but I guess there's a bit of it. We can see places like this where, okay, the farmers' costs are going up, but as long as their input, their output payments are going up as fast or faster than their input costs are going up, the farmers are doing okay. Right now, I know we're taking a snapshot and looking and going, okay, this is where we are right now, and this is a nice place to be. And maybe in 6 months or a year's time, we might have a lot of regrets over how fast prices rose. But if we get inflation easing off, or inflation growth slowing or turning over, like, we're starting to see some kind of points out. If you look at the energy market right now, it's like the oil price is kind of well below $100 for quite a long time now. Fertilizer prices are coming off as well. So we see this kind of rollover inflation. We see the input, the output costs output earnings from farms has risen to meet the costs, then I think farmers could actually get through, the agriculture sector could get through this inflationary period in reasonably good shape, which if you asked me a year ago, I would be much more concerned. So I think it's positive. We'll see how it turns out, but it's nice to see some good news in the, you know, for Origin shareholders, good news as well. But I think the good news, that looking at how this means for the industry, seems to be overall generally good news. And just one other story I'm going to hit on quickly on the global agribusiness thing. There, Fonterra last week sold their Chile business. Chile as in the country, business in the country, Chile, not their frozen food business. Sold it last week. And it's part of Fonterra's kind of move back to New Zealand. They had had a big global expansion kind of 10 years ago, 15 years ago, kind of looked at kind of becoming the global player in dairy markets. And they've kind of, I think, changed their mind a lot in that. They've got rid of the business in South America. They were talking about IPO in their Australia business last year, but they seem to have kind of backed away from that. So they're not going to IPO that now, but they kind of seem to concentrate very much on New Zealand with some work in Australia and just making the most out of what they're doing there. So it's interesting to see that kind of retrenchment going on there. But one other thing that caught our eyes this week, and Anne, this is something you've touched on, you've been the guru on fertilizer, like Phelan's been our Brexit guru. I was talking about fertilizer there and fertilizer prices, like they had risen a lot earlier on in the year. Like that's been a story we've covered, I suppose, intimately so far this year, and it has started to roll over as well. But I saw one interesting thing this week. Mr. Rycoach started a colleague. He was saying that he didn't want to get involved with this government purchase bulk buying of fertilizer because he said he was afraid it would distort pricing in the markets. Like my thoughts on this was that, like, of course it's going to distort the price in the markets. Like, that's literally the idea. You go, you buy the stuff in the market, and because you're a bulk buyer, you're setting the price rather than having the farmer getting squashed by, I suppose, the big guy, right, who's setting the price for the farmer. So do you have any thoughts on that? Because it seems to me like McCullough is kind of doesn't make, his comments don't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I think like it's a very fine balancing act, Lorcan, in terms of ultimately this is intervening in the market. On the input side, we've great experience in the EU, of course, in intervening in output markets in the past. But the challenge here is, I suppose, first of all, you do risk kind of stabilizing the fertilizer market at its current price, or maybe at a higher price than it ought to trade at when you intervene. And it's when we're talking about this, it's not just because this comes out of the what we talked about last week, the EU's plan to support fertilizer production and end users in the EU. So this comes out of one of the measures in that. So if all countries in the EU decided to implement this measure, it's likely that it would have an impact, and then spread that out globally, it does have an impact. And I suppose the challenge is, first of all, we are in a falling market at the moment. I'm looking at Egyptian urea prices at the moment. They've come off another $50 a ton in the past couple of days, now trading at about $540 a ton. So substantially back on where they were even a month or 2 months ago. So you don't want to interfere with that market and those falling prices. You want farmers to have the benefit of that. I suppose the other challenge is, you know, when you do intervene in a commodity market and something like stabilizing fertilizer prices for farmers, it can mean that you, over the longer term, say over the course of a season, maybe a season and a half, that it takes longer for prices to come back than they ordinarily would have if you hadn't intervened in the market. And I think they're the types of things that the minister will be cognizant of. And I suppose the other side to this is, you know, there are commercial businesses operating in the sector. There's you know, a huge fertilizer supply chain across Europe, part of that in Ireland, where we have a body of importers. We have no fertilizer manufacturing in Ireland, but we do have a body of importers who take the product into the country and either sell directly themselves to farmers or through a combination of direct sales and through the merchant and co-op system. So that whole supply chain is invested. And how do you deal with that? And how do you, if you do intervene, how do you do it so that, you know, you're not ultimately impacting on another commercial entity or other commercial entities that are operating in the sector? And gosh, I suppose...
So just to get my head around what you're saying. So what we're saying is that right now fertilizer prices are falling. And if you get the governments coming in, the European governments coming in buying fertilizer right now, rather than protecting farmers from price rises, they could be actually stopping farmers getting the price reductions that they want. So when the government should have been maybe in March or April when prices were skyrocketing, but now the prices are falling, the government's probably better off just leaving the market alone because the market will find a level all by itself. Is that?
Yeah, ultimately. And I mean, I suppose that, yes, absolutely, ultimately. And now that's no good to a farmer listening to us talking, saying, well, this is all very academic to me. I can't afford to buy the fertilizer that I need, which in turn means I can't grow the grass that I need. And that has a knock-on effect. And ultimately, that is a reality here. I suppose, look, if we were talking in the global sense here, and there have been really loud calls from the likes of the World Bank, the UN, different international institutions for exactly not this. Don't interfere in and intervene with the fertilizer market, whether that's intervening to support rich countries, if you would, intervening to support their farmers and their industries and buying it, and countries that have fertilizer asking them to stop intervening in restricting exports and holding it for their own industry. Because actually, who bears the brunt of it, while it does impact on the Irish farmer, who does bear the brunt of it are the lowest income countries in the world who can't access fertilizer, who do rely on imports of staple foods, staple grains to feed their populations, to supplement their own production, which is really falling quite rapidly because they can't afford. And those governments don't have the money to compete. They can't compete with the likes of European governments in terms of going out to the market and buying fertilizer. So it exacerbates all of those global problems that we have around food security that aren't really, really being felt in the Irish or the European context. So like it impacts farmers here. The choices that the government here make in a very meaningful way will impact Irish farmers. And arguably, farmers would say, well, it could positively impact me. But over the longer term, we just don't know how those policies play out. And it needs to be crafted very carefully. But we do know that that type of market intervention, it does have a severe impact on the lowest income farmers and populations in the world, and who are already, you know, falling more and more into hunger and starvation this year, as we've covered before. So that's another factor, I think, that influences, and particularly at the global level. It is a wait and see. And I think the government could do something creative here working with the merchants. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what comes of that.
Yeah, I think the argument, I suppose, like the ultimate solution to this is it's just supply. There needs to be extra supply. If it's more supply in the market, then the price will fall. I think very briefly, if you could just touch on one thing, that the Russian sanctions and this kind of workaround for Russian sanctions. Do you feel that the amount of fertilizer that's coming out of Russia is what the sanction regime is allowing, or are people still afraid to touch Russian fertilizer? I mean, on a global scale, like, you know, it doesn't seem to be that the production that is allowed to come out is still not being fully kind of taken advantage of.
So consistently, our fertilizer analysts that we talk to have been saying that fertilizer exports from Russia are down about 25%. And the International Food Policy Research Institute, they've done an analysis on this, and they've taken a look at it using, you know, import data into other countries to try and give a mirror, I suppose, of what Russia is exporting. And they've said what they've ultimately said is urea is down about 23%. Potash is down about 20%, which is interesting. You would expect it to be down more, given that potash in particular is restricted because of the restrictions on Belarusian potash. And the real main phosphate exports are up out of Russia, which is interesting but not surprising because of the restrictions on Chinese phosphate exports. And they're a huge exporter of phosphate onto the world market. The real pinch point, and we've spoke about this before, and we talked about it last week in terms of the Black Sea grain initiative, are those ammonia exports. And they're down by over 60%. And that's really relating to one pipeline that comes from Russia through Ukraine to the port port at the Black Sea. And that's obviously ammonia for agricultural use. So it can be manufactured. Ammonia is then manufactured into nitrogen, and it's also used for industrial purposes. So I think in summary, what they were saying, Lorcan, is, you know, it hasn't been a dramatic fall off. 25% is significant, but it's not as dramatic as we might have expected or thought. And I think what they've also found is, you know, it's been offset. So they're showing where the offsets are globally. You know, in the European context, Egypt has been a key offset. Ammonia is a key input from Russia into Egyptian nitrogen manufacture. They've found the supply chain workaround to supply their ammonia, and they're increasing their nitrogen production. So They are painting the picture of a rebalancing. They looked at the data over the first 9 months of the year. The most severe impact was in the first 4 months. So really in the early stages of the war, when supply chains were really significantly disrupted, and have started to straighten out. And I suppose we always knew that that would happen to a degree, that supply chains will find a way to rebalance, you know, in to the greatest extent that they can. There is some disruption still, I think, and you know that yourself, in the financing of the trade from Russia, the insuring of the trade from Russia. And there's been a lot of international efforts, letters of comfort from the US Treasury around this. There's been an agreement signed by the UK, the EU and the US in recent weeks, again, to provide comfort to exporters, to traders, to financial institutions, to insurers, to all of the people who make trade happen, to say this trade is okay.
I think this guy mentioned as well, like you said, like the disruption was very front-loaded with the war 3 or 4 months ago, at the first few months of the war. But it's like the disruption is... It's kind of there's more a fear of disruption than actual disruption these days in the market. Like there seems to be a lot, like the price should be coming down almost faster than it is at the moment, judging by the amount of supply that seems to be around. I think, like we said, something we're definitely going to continue to keep an eye on in the coming weeks and months, and hopefully this time in springtime, hopefully we'll be saying, well, fertilizer's back under $400 a ton. Drive on, lads. Fingers crossed. I think that's about it for this week. We've taken off your time. Thank you very much, Phelim and Anne, and we'll talk to you next week.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.